Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts.
Hey, tomorrow night on the show, Heather McDonald with the Manhattan Institute, who is always great on crime and some of the policing issues. She'll chime in on Tyre Nichols in that case. Will Scharf, who's getting into the Missouri Attorney General's race, will be here as well. Of course, as we get closer to Friday, we have a roundtable in the 3 o'clock hour. Jane Duker, Chris Goodson, former State Senator Jeff Smith will be here. That's all on Friday afternoon. We have former Senator Talent on deck. He's coming up in just a couple of minutes. I did want to emphasize one story, though, that I have not given attention to today. A big, big win, I would say, for conservatives and certainly for Ron DeSantis. And here's the story. This is even from the lefty publication, The Washington Post. Amid attacks from DeSantis, AP African American Studies course is updated. The subheadline is, the College Board denies that it watered down the course after criticism from Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. But guess what? The College Board did water it down. You know why? Because some of this stuff should not have been in there. So the story reads this way. After a long debate on how to construct a class focused on the Black experience, the College Board on Wednesday finalized a plan for its new advanced placement course in African American Studies that seeks to immerse students in Black history and culture, without shying from fraught topics of race and racism in a way that until now has been mostly available on college campuses. So this is where they get into the claim that they deny any suggestion that it watered down the course after Ron DeSantis got involved and attacked the draft as progressive indoctrination. But as the Post points out, the 234-page document now omits a mention of certain left-leaning figures who appeared in previous versions. Gone, for instance, Kimberle Crenshaw, a scholar and writer on civil rights and critical race theory. Angela Davis, a political activist and academic known for her membership in the Communists and the Black Panthers parties. Those are great things to be teaching our youths of America. The document also, and this is why, you don't even have to know anything more than this. It listed some potentially controversial topics that students might explore through independent projects. Examples include affirmative action, reparations, Black Lives Matter, and queer life and expression in Black communities. So those are the things that essentially were removed from the College Board documents. But I guess they say, if you want to explore those on your own, because, look, if you don't explore queer experience in queer life and expression, I'm sorry, in Black communities, how can you even call yourself African-American in this country? So think about that. But that is a huge win, not only for the culture, for the parents of people across this country, but certainly for Ron DeSantis. Let's go to former Senator Jim Talent, who's going to talk Ukraine with us. But I'd love for you to weigh in on that. That's a victory for DeSantis, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, he's certainly shown that he knows how to be effective in exercising the powers of his office. And I think one of the reasons is, if you listen to DeSantis, he understands these issues that he takes on. In other words, he's obviously capable of absorbing a lot of information quickly and then systematizing it. I know I'm elevating myself almost into a philosophical realm here. But therefore able to talk about it in a compelling way. I noticed that first with the way he handled the pandemic. When he did a town hall meeting with three dissenting but very, very credible scientists, including Martin Kulldorff and Jay Bhattacharya, and then YouTube took it down. But it was a 90-minute town hall he did with them where he had clearly, this was in the summer of 2020, really come to understand the issues that were at stake, and Florida benefited from it.
You know, the one thing that I said, and I saw some other people write about this, and I don't think that this happened with this, but if you're going to have some of the communists and the left leaning leaders and, you know, people with the Black Panthers sided and trying to educate these kids, why not at the very least, and boy, this was a bridge too far, have opposing voices, opposing African-American voices like Glenn Lowry and others. Glenn Lowry has been brilliant on this issue of race, really kind of blowing up the narrative that many people on the left have when it comes to racial relations in this country. Why not have him represented, or some of the other folks, at Thomas Sowell, for example, Jim, that could present a different, but they won't do that, will they?
Yeah, because the object is to indoctrinate kids in a really unbalanced view of American history and current American society as well. And the flavor of this is to look at everything through a very extreme racialized lens. When this country is about, I mean, the ideal of this country is based on the organic worth of people as individuals. So what we should be trying to do is to look at people insofar as we can without regard to race. And critical race theory is exactly the opposite. That's all it sees. It reduces people to that one identity marker. And that demeans their humanity. It's wrong, and it's really dangerous.
It is dangerous, I'm glad
you got rid of it.
I am, too. And, you know, this not the thing is, there's so much nonsense in the coverage of this. And one of the things that frustrated me, even the Washington Post story probably included, if you just Google stories on this from the last month or two when DeSantis got involved, you would not be able to find any specifics of what was being deemed by DeSantis and the folks in Florida as indoctrination, because no one really wanted to go forward with the curriculum. They didn't want to show you what was in this. That's why he had to come forward and say, look, some of this stuff is about queer life and expression in Black communities. Maybe that has a place somewhere else, but not in the College Board Advanced Placement course on African-American studies. Let's leave that for somebody else, right? Maybe not high school. So he makes legitimate questions and concerns about this. But when the media covered this, Jim, they didn't want to get into any of that. They just wanted to portray this. And the Washington Post did this story about a professor down there that was worried about, you know, taking his class to the site of lynchings that he had done for many years. There's nobody that I know that is encouraging professors, high school teachers, to not teach about the Tulsa race riot, to not teach about lynchings. All of that is horrifyingly acceptable because it happened in this country. It's the indoctrination part that we were worried about.
Yeah, and the extreme imbalance. To say, for example, as they said in that series in the New York Times, that the American Revolution was fought to protect slavery.
It's nonsense.
It's simply wrong.
It is wrong. And now you got that, by the way, now you got that on Hulu.
The principles under which the revolution was fought and which were announced in the Declaration of Independence were the principles by which we got rid of slavery. Okay, I mean, all you got to do is know anything about Lincoln and his constant reference to the Declaration, because it opens up saying the old these truths be self-evident, that all men are created equal, and in what sense? That they have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness because of the organic value of the individual human being, regardless of race or ethnicity. That was the principle in which it was fought and for which it was fought. And you are correct that it took a long time, too long, to make that principle real for people. That's the sin of the country, not the founding principles. It's one of the reasons I always, I never understood refusing to salute the flag. In other words, the flag stands for, the country stands for, its ideals stand for, the principles according to which we were able to get rid of those of the things that these people say that they don't like and that none of us like. Okay, but again, this tremendous imbalance directed at kids who don't have the experience in life to recognize, in many of them, that they're being indoctrinated.
And I'm really concerned about the long-term consequences of that. Coming off a poll that I saw a couple of weeks ago about the amount of Gen Z kids who actually really consider themselves patriotic or love America. I mean, the patriotism, and I'd be the first to admit, I think you would too, we got a lot of problems in this country over the course of history. And there were probably issues, if we go back when I was in, you know, elementary school, high school in the 70s and 80s. Yeah, did we learn enough about the true American history when it came to race relations? Probably not, but that was a transformative time and we were evolving. And we've evolved to the point where we had an African-American president. We still have racism that is horrific, I'd say, on all sides, even maybe against white people these days. But you move forward. But just to live in the past, I'm clearly not sure. I said this last week, Senator. Why aren't people from Germany ostracized? Like, everybody from Germany has to be a bad person because of the Nazis, right? I mean, it happened, so why not tag every person of German heritage with the horrific atrocities of the Holocaust? Well, we don't do that, but we do it with white people in America, don't we?
Well, and part of critical race theory is teaching people that if you're white, you have this evil in you.
Inherently evil.
It's re-racializing. It's just turning it around and doing it to a different race. I mean, it's wrong for all the reasons racism is wrong, chief among which is that it reduces really complex, valuable people who have tremendous dignity because of their humanity down to one identity marker. And if you're going to do, the worst identity marker to pick is race, because it's irrelevant 99% of the time, and because it's so divisive to reduce people to the color of their skin. It really bothers me because of my age. I mean, I was young during the 60s and the Civil Rights Revolution, and we were all in agreement at that point that what we try to do, we can't do it entirely, but we try to act without regard to race and see people as people. Okay, and that's really what's offensive about this. And then for it to be done under the guise of anti-racism, it's hypocritical, which is one thing I think that the old racists weren't, at least. They were upfront about what they were. So, yeah, I mean, DeSantis is doing the right thing. I think you're going to see other states following suit.
I hope
and,
so.
It's a victory for him. Look, I have a great deal of admiration for him. I think he's highly skilled. He knows how to use the powers of his office effectively and to use the power of ideas effectively. And that's the kind of leader we need.
Former Senator Jim Talent is with us. You and I have been talking, well, we've known each other for a long time, but we have been talking about this invasion of the Ukraine almost a year. It was February 24th. I just cross-checked that. And we're still fighting this war, and we still don't have, really an end game. And there are still questions about how much we should get involved and how many tanks we should send and how much money we should send. And I'm in the camp, just in the effort of full disclosure, that thinks that we need to have a little bit more accountability for some of this money that's being spent in Ukraine. But how would you assess where we are right now? Are we any closer to a resolution than we were, say, a few months ago, even 6 months ago?
Well, we have to wait to see. We have to see what happens in the rest of this winter and in the spring. I mean, we're now hearing that the Russians may be gathering their forces for an offensive. I think that's going to tell a lot whether they're able to do that or whether Ukraine is able to go back on the offensive. I wrote a column, what was it, a week or 2 weeks ago, in which I said, look, we got into this war to protect American interests because Russia had made itself an adversary of the United States globally. It was very much in our interest to keep them from extending their influence in Europe and to weaken the Russian state. And that's already happened. Okay. So now the issue is the Ukrainians want their whole country back. And there are circumstances under which it's not going to be in our interest to support them indefinitely in doing it. In other words, fighting this war for years on an essentially stalemated battlefield is not really in our interests. So the question is, what can we give the Ukrainians in order to make it worth their while to agree to less than getting their whole territory back? And I speculated in the column, we should consider admitting them to NATO. In other words, they get future security in return for not getting the Donbass back. It's not going to be that difficult because the Russian military power has been degraded so much. Ukraine's would actually be an outstanding ally. I mean, they have the most experienced fighting army in Europe now, next to the United States, the most experienced in the alliance. And I think it would put paid to Russian aggression and Russian ambitions in the future. So that's the sort of thing we should be thinking about, because I agree. I mean, if the battlefield becomes stalemated, it's not really in anybody's interest to continue the war indefinitely. But in the meantime, we should be following through on our policy and supporting them. And the Biden administration is dithering and saying 1 month you're not going to send tanks, and then you're going to send tanks. 1 month you're not going to send aircraft, and then you're going to send aircraft. Mark, that has to be wrong. In other words, one of those two positions has to be wrong, right? because they're contradictory.
Well, what's up? Let me ask you a couple of specifics about what we're giving them. Germany and the U.S. has announced plans to give them one battery each of the Patriot air defense system. What exactly does that mean? What will that provide them with?
A Patriot air defense system is a localized or regional defense system. So one of the things they need is anti-air defenses, because the Russians have been trying to take out their critical infrastructure. They failed strategically. They've caused some problems, but they failed. So air defenses enables them to shoot those missiles down and protect their electricity grid and their network and the rest of it. Another thing they've needed for months and months is better armored vehicles. And we're finally sending them Bradley fighting vehicles. And eventually, I guess, they're going to get some tanks. So, you know, that they need that as well. And then they need ammunition for their 155, the howitzers, replacement barrels, and that sort of thing. That should not be a problem for us, except we've allowed the defense industrial base to atrophy so that it's difficult to ramp up production. But we might as well start doing it, because if we have any intention of defending Taiwan, they are really going to have to stockpile all this stuff, because they're going to be blockaded. If there's a war there, they'll be blockaded from day one.
So, and I understand the calls for more military equipment. And, you know, we have, I guess, what is it, a few dozen M1 Abrams tanks. And then the Germany and some of the other countries are going to send the Leopard tanks. This is where I'm confused. We're not going to get directly involved, right? NATO's not getting directly involved. Ukraine's not a NATO member at this point. But how is not sending or how is sending greater quantities of weapons from the U.S. and the allies not being deemed escalation by Putin, where there would be a response? Why is Putin letting all this happen?
Well, because it's been our policy from the beginning, and we have to structure our policy to benefit the interests of the United States, not to cater to Vladimir Putin.
No, and I understand that, but I guess the question is, wouldn't there be, I guess I would expect a response from Putin is what I'm saying. Like, if I'm Putin and I'm seeing all this action on the part of Germany and the U.S. to try to get involved in my war when Ukraine's not a NATO member, I'm going to think about how to retaliate in that sense. Does that make sense?
He's thinking about it. But the issue is that he's been losing. In other words, his capability to respond has been substantially degraded because of the way he conducted the invasion. I mean, the blunders in the opening weeks of the war will go down on the Mount Rushmore of strategic blunders that the Russians committed, and they're trying to reconstitute now, but it's extremely difficult. So we and our ally have the upper hand, and we ought to push it. I mean, for once, let's have a policy that doesn't try and snatch defeat from the jaws of victory is the way I think about it. And we've had success to this point. In my opinion, we need to continue the policy. I also think that we have to be careful not to enhance our reputation for being, treacherous as an ally. So if we back out now, when things are hanging fire in country, it'll be seen just like the evacuation from Afghanistan.
And I understand that.
It's also important. Yeah.
Well, I understand that, but here's what I'd say to that. Here's my concern, because we're really good at doing this. We're going to spend all this money. We're sending billions of dollars. We got this military equipment. I don't know. There's people saying we should train, Ukrainians better training, maybe to fly F-16s, et cetera. So there's drip, 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 help. I'm an ROI guy, okay? So what is the return on investment? Because if this thing just keeps going on and dragging on, and that's seemingly where we are right now, then I think there's no return on investment. We gave all this money and equipment to what end? That would be my concern. Now, if you're really ramping up,
that is weakened, less capable, for example, of supporting China in the Indo-Pacific. They've done joint military exercises. Well, they don't have as much of a military now to exercise with them. A Russia that's lost credibility in places like the Middle East, where they're supporting Iran, Hezbollah, Syria. A Russia that's made itself our adversary. And see, I think the message we should have sent, I doubt Biden really did it forcefully, was, well, you know what? If you don't want the United States to support Ukraine, and clearly the right is on the side of Ukraine, I mean, it's a policy that comports with our values as well as our interests. If you don't want the United States to support Ukraine, maybe you ought to consider trying to kick us in the shins, and I was going to use a more earthy expression there, in the Middle East, in the Far East, declaring unlimited friendship with Xi Jinping. You know what I mean? In other words, this is a way of showing that the friends of the United States get the support of the United States and the adversaries don't. That was one of the geniuses of Trump's foreign policy. Really, it's common sense. Let's support our friends and oppose our adversaries.
Well, I understand that. Yeah. And I understand that. I think that the money and the accounting of where all the money is going is something that would still be important to me. Hey, one more question. Do you have any confidential documents, top secret documents in the garage or anything that you and Brenda have run across in the past couple of weeks?
Well, after everything that's happened, Brenda's down searching in the basement right now. But the answer is no. And I'm really wonder how he got it when he was a senator, because I can tell you, you know, you go and view these classified documents, you do them in skiffs in special areas, and you got to hand them back when you leave.
Yeah, well, a lot of questions. I got to run to another segment. Former Senator Jim Talent, always great to have you on. I appreciate it, Jim. Thank you. Keep me posting on the confidential documents, if you would.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Fred just left, and he's going out of town, you know, later this week.
Yeah, how you taking that?
I don't like it. I don't like it at all.
I don't either.
Fred Bottenheimer over there, ladies and gentlemen.
Kenny Wallace doesn't like it either. How are you this afternoon?
I'm doing really good, listening to you, but now I'm at home and paying car insurance bills. You know, they send me my car insurance almost 3 months early. I think they're trying to get my money, like, over 2 months early. So I'm debating, should I pay it now or should I, you know, wait and pay it? What would you do?
Do you have a Hyundai?
Hyundai.
I always say the name wrong.
Horrible.
Sorry. Well, that's weird to me because, like, mine, you're a big, you know, celebrity and sports star. I just get it. It comes out of my, you know, bank account every month. That's you must handle things differently. Don't you have people for that?
Let me tell you something. I was born in 1963, and if you ever Google Daryl Strawberry, the Mets, New York Mets pitcher, all those people that had money, they let people handle their money. And
they lost it.
Yeah, it didn't pan out.
That's a good point.
Don't ever let people handle your money. So anyway, having fun here. My insurance is due 3 of 24, January, February, March 24th.
Okay.
Here we are. February 1st, they sent me a bill.
Well, it does seem weird, though, Kenny.
Trying to give you advance notice, yeah, I guess. Look, you've got something now. I've noticed this online, a big presence on Twitter, but you're doing something now called The Kenny Wallace Show that's on YouTube, right?
Yeah, so would you like me to tell you what that's all about?
I would love for you, because the one thing as a host that I love to do is promote other shows where people can go and not listen to me and get better entertainment. So absolutely I would like the details on that, Kenny.
First of all, I could never, ever compare to you. Nothing compares to you.
Oh, there's breaking into song.
But anyway, so sitting, accurate story. He's probably listening. Sitting on my couch about this time 1 year ago, Charlie Marlowe decides to quit Channel 2 Sports, him and Martin Kilcoyne down there, and Charlie's going to do something different. And Charlie calls me up. He says, Herman, he says, you need to start a YouTube deal. I said, Charlie, I don't want nothing to do with that stuff. It's just out of my deal. And he goes, all you got to do is just do what you do and let me handle the rest. So I said, no. So about a month later, I said, okay, let's try it. So we tried it, and it took me about 3 months to find out what my niche was. You know, what should I be posting, you know? I tried too hard at first. I was down at the Mexican border and did an incredible video. It was really good.
How did I miss that? When did you do that?
Oh, just go on YouTube and go Kenny Wallace, Mexican border. You'll call me back and you'll go, wow.
Okay.
Because U.S. Border Patrol used to sponsor my race car. But when I showed up, they're like, you know, hey, thanks for being here. you know, the media never reports accurate. So I make this incredible video, only gets like 50, 60,000 views, which, you know, I mean, that's nice, but we're looking, you know, to keep doing better. So I do some videos of me at the racetrack, and okay, and my niche was this. What we found out about halfway through the summer is people just wanted me to sit at my office desk and talk about the hot topics, you know? And so I did it, and it just blew up from there. And I sent you a snapshot of, you know, some of our top stories that I did all year. So, you know, either 300 to 600,000 views.
Yeah. Well, so this makes more sense to me because I knew that you were doing, you've told me about this and we talked about what you were doing with Charlie. And I remember a year ago, you said, yeah, I'm doing this thing, and you didn't make a big deal out of it. And I've seen some things on Twitter, but then it seems like recently, so this makes more sense to me that you have kind of dialed it in because I'm seeing the show posted a lot and your niche is being displayed, I guess you would. Now you have, on one of these, you have 537,000 views. Which one was that?
That was when I gave my opinion on an article that was wrote. The president of Toyota Racing Development, David Wilson, he gave this really good interview about why Carl Edwards quit NASCAR. Why did Carl Edwards retire? And I just read the article, and I said, hey, Carl Edwards, you know, quit NASCAR with a broken heart. And I gave my opinion. And then Dale Earnhardt Jr. got on Twitter and said, I agree with you. And then that's a good one. And
well,
then,
can you let me stop you there? Let's share that story a little bit because look, Carl Edwards is from Missouri. He's a Columbia guy. So what happened? I was always confused. He was one of the biggest rising stars, and then he kind of just disappeared a little bit, right?
Yeah, I'll quickly go through it. So Carl Edwards, not 100 miles up the road, you know, knocking down about, I mean, he's probably making 20, 30 million a year racing in NASCAR. You know, kid out of Missouri, makes it, you know, big time. So anyway, he tied for a championship one year with Tony Stewart. So then the next year he goes back and he's leading the race in Miami Homestead. He's going to win the championship, and NASCAR decides to throw a caution for debris with like five laps to go. And it's like heart-wrenching, right? So they throw this caution, and the caution flag, you know, does not need to be thrown. There's nothing on the racetrack. Well, NASCAR started becoming very famous over the last 20 years for trying to make the show exciting. In other words, throw a caution at any time the race is boring. Well, okay, now let's fast forward. David Wilson, who is the president of Toyota Racing Development, he says, yeah, we talked to NASCAR about throwing those fake cautions. And I'm like, whoa, he went there. Because we all know it. Yeah, we all know it, but it's kind of like wrestling. We just don't talk about it.
Oh, that is so fascinating.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, so I had to talk about it. And I said, well, it's pretty simple to me. Carl Edwards is leading this race. He's going to win the championship. They throw a fake caution. Then he gets into a wreck on the restart with Joey Logano. So basically what they did at the time was they circumvented the finish, you know, kind of like, you know how everybody's saying, okay, you know, the Cincinnati Bengals should have been penalized.
I was going to bring it up, right.
That. Yeah, right. Well, so, you know, okay, that's a debate, right? But we all know that, okay, come on. You know, you push the guy, he falls down, and you're going to attack a 20-yard penalty. So,
well,
boom, they yeah, enough to where it's a chip shot for a field goal.
Yes, exactly.
So anyway, I gave that, and oh my God, it just exploded. Blew up. And so then people caught on to the article because even media was sharing it. And, you know, so then I just started, you know, commenting on what the hot topic was, you know, Bubba Wallace and, you know, Kyle Larson, you know, got into a fisticuffs.
Oh, right. And, right. I heard about that. Yeah.
You know, that's close to 400,000 views. So the Kenny Wallace show on YouTube is just constantly creating content, and Charlie is really good at editing because, you know, he worked for Channel 2 forever. And I mean, we record it, and he takes it, and he goes with it. And listen, we're having fun. You know, I'm kind of like the Walmart greeter. It's some spare change for retirement.
Hey, look, and I'm going to say something here. I'm going to put this into real numbers, because your views on this show, even at the low point, the low point isn't very low, it's still 200,000 views, that's better than the numbers that CNN is pulling in prime time.
Seriously,
especially in the demo. They're really struggling over there. So you get 500,000 views on something, that's pretty good retirement money. There's no doubt about that. So congratulations on that. Are you having guests? I can't remember if you're having guests.
Not yet. We're new, and I talked to some YouTube professionals. I just luckily met them, and I was humble, and I said, hey, give me your advice. And they said, whatever you do, don't create a production. They said, nowadays these kids and people, they like it when it's rough
Simple.
Around the edges.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, so don't create this big production room. And so we're just doing it
That's
off on my cell phone through StreamYard, and it's just, and then I promote it. And Twitter, let me end like this. Twitter was hard, but Elon's made it better. So that's why I post it on Twitter now, and I say, take your finger and tap here. Because people were too lazy to do that. And we looked at the analytics, and Twitter, it was very hard for people to know they can just tap something with their finger and the story pops up. So now Elon's made it where you tap it, and it's right there.
Yeah, that's nice. Well, it's awesome, I think, that you're doing this and you're keeping it simple, because they're relatively short, too, which I think is very user-friendly. So I'm impressed. You're a media mogul, Kenny Wallace. What can I say? That's what you are, and that's who
Stop
you are.
Stop it.
I do have to ask you something on racing, and you know that I'm not the biggest NASCAR person. I don't know anything about it. However, we talked about this last year, and this seems like a lot of fun. It's coming up this weekend. The Clash at the Coliseum is this weekend, right?
Yes, so they're taking the L.A. Coliseum. They ripped up the football field. They put down a racetrack. This will be the second year they do it. Now, the reason they're doing it a second year is because the first year was very successful. It is called the Busch Light Clash at the Coliseum, and it's going to be on Channel 2, man. It's going to be 8 o'clock, Eastern time, so it's probably going to start at 7 o'clock
here,
this
right.
Sunday. Yep, just turn on Channel 2. I mean, it's big time, and it's going to be great entertainment. It's a race that you're going to watch, and you're going to go, are you kidding me? They're racing around a football field.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And it's going to be entertainment.
We talked about it last year.
Yeah.
It looked a lot of fun, so I'm going to tune in this week. I am appreciating the other thing I like about your recent Twitter post, and I think you were listening the other day when I said this. You're posting all these pictures of a younger, dashing, handsome Kenny Wallace. Looks right out of the movies from the 1960s. I'm telling you.
Well, I had to reinvent myself on Twitter. I was going to bed upset with politics, so I do not argue with anybody anymore. I don't talk politics anymore because I'm too passionate about it. If I was going to be myself, I'd probably be kicked off of Twitter. So no politics, no commenting on it, no arguing with anybody, and just have a good time.
Well, I think that's a good rule. And look, you always have me, and we do this every once in a while where you vent on politics. But I think people go to Kenny Wallace
for entertainment.
And I know that I do, because I want to hear stuff like this when I talk to you.
Isn't that great? Well, if you go on Twitter today, you'll see that I had a flat tire on my way to Farmington. I was going to a dear friend of mine. His mom passed away, so I was headed down there. Real nice tire, had a lot of tread on it. I guess I ran over something. So I got a couple pictures of my drama today.
Did you call AAA?
I have AAA, but I was too hyper. I'm like, I'll change this damn thing.
You can't just call in like a pit crew. There's got to be a pit crew just waiting for you at any time, right? You get a flat tire, they just jump on there, change that tire. You're back on the road in 35 seconds, I think.
You do want to call. Look, 90% of the people do want to call AAA. I pay $86 a year. I have it. And let me tell you why. A normal person like I kind of got some mechanical abilities, but they hide the jack. They hide everything. And, changing the tire is easy. It's finding the stuff.
Yeah, no, I believe that. All right, listen, good luck with the Kenny Wallace Show. You can find it on YouTube. Follow Herm on Twitter. If you want to vent on politics, you can always text and call me. You know that. We'll talk soon. Thank you, Kenny.
Sue's News.
Thanks.
Bye.
You know what? You just can't. Wait a second. I'm going to be in touch with you, and here's why. He just gave me a great idea. Sue's gone for a few days. I think we have to have him doing Sue's News.
Of course you do.
All right, we're going to get a contract drawn up. Kenny, we're going to get with you. Fred will get with you. We'll talk about it. We'll see you. I have audio cut of the day coming up here, but I have to spend a little time on Mark Houck. I've talked about this story before, and I just didn't have time to get to it this week, and I heard him being interviewed on Fox again. This is the guy who is from Philadelphia. He's an anti-abortion activist, and he was accused of assaulting a 72-year-old clinic volunteer outside of a Planned Parenthood in Philadelphia. Now, he's now been acquitted of charges, federal charges, that he instigated the encounter. What happened was this all happened. He was 47 years old, and when there was a bit of a disagreement outside of this abortion clinic, he was accused of shoving someone to the ground. Now, his story all along was that, look, the guy was harassing my 12-year-old son, and that's why I reacted. So the local police, local authorities looked into this. They decided not to come forward with charges, and then the feds get involved, and they charge this guy. Here's what he said on Fox.
Well, that's a good question, and I really don't have answers for that. But I would just give all thanks to God for the result that we have. We had a local problem, a father's rights, basically a dad trying to protect his son. It was handled in the local courts, dismissed in the local courts, but the federal government picked it up 5 days after the dismissal, decided to make a case of it. I don't really get into the opinions of whether it's a political issue or not. Seems logical to me.
All right. So the FACE Act is what they were kind of relying on, the feds. The FACE Act makes it a federal crime to use force, threats, or physical obstruction to block the entrance to reproductive health clinics. So they swarmed on this guy's house. Listen to what happened when they arrested him. Again, local authorities look into this. They don't charge him with anything. And then after the fact, the feds come. He's got seven kids sleeping, and they raid his house.
I've seen varying accounts of the numbers FBI agents went to your house, up to 25. Well, can you confirm that today, that it was 25? Was it more or less than that? What was the number?
Right. It was over 20, Bill. Okay. 10 to 15 unmarked and marked units on my property, but over 20 federal agents and PA state troopers.
Who all was home at that time? You and who else?
It was 6:45 in the morning. I was up. My wife was asleep, and my seven children were still asleep.
I mean, this is pure and simple government intimidation by the Biden Justice Department. And it's not coincidental that this happened when Joe Biden was president, when abortion is at the forefront. Mark Houck said, but what happened was this thing goes to the jury last week. At first, they're locked up. The judge says, nope, you got to come back with a verdict. And then they find that he's not guilty. He never denied twice shoving Bruce Love and somebody else outside that clinic in 2021. But he said, look, I did it because they were going after my son. The jury said, no, not guilty.
I give thanks that the jury saw that I was an innocent man, that I was a dad. I was a dad just trying to protect his 12-year-old son and exercise my First Amendment rights, Bill. I was just there doing what I always do for the last 20 years. And so I think the jury saw through it, a jury of my peers in Philadelphia. It was a unanimous verdict, right? So 12 jurors saw the truth for what it was. I had a phenomenal legal team led by Brian McMonagle, probably the best criminal defense attorney in the country.
Why did they pick him? Why did the DOJ go after him?
Look, I'm a pro-lifer, and I've been a pro-lifer. I've been an activist for 20-plus years. And, we all know what happened in June. We all know that Roe v. Wade was overturned. And does it sound like a coincidence? I can't speculate, but it seems too good to be true for me that the government would decide after 20 years that this is the time to go after this man who's been peacefully protesting, praying for years. And all of a sudden, in light of the climate and the culture, this is a good time to come after pro-lifers. That's all I can say and speculate.
I think he's right about that. And a good victory for Mark Houck in the end.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Okay, those easily could have been audio cuts of the day, if you will. I went in a musical direction because we have some concerts, some big concerts for St. Louis who have been, that have been announced. Sue, I don't know if you heard about these earlier in the day.
I heard about one.
Bryan Adams. coming back to St. Louis, this time Enterprise Center. I saw him at the Fox the last time.
Oh, interesting.
I saw Bryan Adams. That
I like Bryan Adams.
I do too, but that seems a little ambitious, Enterprise, but who knows? I don't know. What do I know? So July 1st for Bryan Adams, not to be confused with Ryan Adams, who was at the factory recently. And then August 21st, big show, the Dome at America's Center.
Wow.
It won't be refurbished by then, so it'll be nasty, and they'll be serving RC Cola and that junk. But you can see Beyonce August 21st at the Dome at America's Center. We'll go out with this. That's your audio cut of the day. We'll talk tomorrow afternoon.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.